We're back to the Neil Haley Show here on the Caregiver Dave celebrity segment. And I'm excited to welcome to the program Caregiver Dave Nassani. Dave, how are you, man? What's going on?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. We're always happy to have this opportunity to talk. And, you know, when you hear of a show, even the second go around when it comes to Twin Peaks, the fans are just absolutely go crazy for this. And James is going to explain that and talk about Potato Dreams of America. So I'm excited to welcome to the program James Ricksoni. James, thanks for stopping by, man. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you so much. It's a beautiful day out in Seattle, so I've got no complaints.
Seattle. My daughter lives there.
A sunny.
Oh, right on.
A sunny
Yeah.
Seattle. When does that ever happen? Maybe how many?
It usually happens when I'm working my job, and so today I have the day off, and it's a first. So I plan on going out and enjoying it at some point.
Yeah, exactly. Seattle has the highest suicide rate because of the cloudiness. So today there will be no suicides.
Amen. Hey, that's a good thing. We're getting some. We're getting some vitamin D. So that's good for everyone.
Amen.
Yeah.
So, I guess sun is such an important thing, but let's just jump into James. Did you always want to be an actor? Is that something you always wanted to do?
I was either going to be an engineer or an actor. When I was a kid, I had a lot of energy. ADHD is what they call it these days. And I was flunking out of school. And I remember my mom coming up to me and telling me, "What do you want to be?" And I was kind of in a mix of watching a lot of Robert De Niro films at like 12, which at 33, I kind of look back and I'm like, yeah, maybe you shouldn't have watched those. But my mom put me into a theater and my dad did too. And it basically, I took to it like a duck to water. I honed in, got hyper-focused. And ever since then, I was about 16. These opportunities kind of just keep falling in my lap. It's like the universe is working for me in that realm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So what was your really first big break, James?
That's a good question. I got started in theater, doing just community theater. That was the next stepping stone was I was doing big production theater and starring in that when I was about 19. And then as soon as that ended, I got the opportunity to co-star in a film called Divination, where it's like this B-rated film where I play an angel. So that was a trip. And then simultaneously, Tobey Maguire, the guy who plays Spider-Man, he was shooting a movie up in Seattle. And I had the opportunity to be his body double. And so it was a great education of being on set, watching how all the mechanisms work. And it was kind of an introduction to the concept of celebrity, which as I grow older, more and more that idea sort of fades away. And it's mostly, for me, it's mostly about doing just really solid work. And so that was kind of my big break. And I was young, so motivated, and it really served me. And I know a lot of my friends kind of went to college to study film. I was unfortunately I didn't have the opportunity to go to college. And so I went right into the workforce, and it served me really well.
Well, yeah, good for you.
So that's interesting. You talk about Tobey Maguire. What movie was it? His body double.
It was called The Details. It was basically just about a guy who was a middle-aged guy that was kind of having a midlife crisis, and a lot of crazy stuff ensues that kind of challenges his character. And it was so awesome because I got to work with Ray Liotta, and. Yeah, man, growing up, I watching Goodfellas, you know, you kind of put these actors, you put these people on a pedestal. They're almost like gods. And then, funny story, I was working up in Concrete, Washington, in the middle of the woods, and we were shooting. And the whole time I kept hearing Ray Liotta was on set. And there was a moment where I had to go to the bathroom. So I jump into the woods and I do number one. And I'm peeing on this tree, and then all of a sudden, I look on the other side of the tree. Ray Liotta's doing the same thing as me, and so my introduction to Ray Liotta was that situation. But he was a super kind guy. Like, and it's really nice to meet celebrities with that status that are kind and communicative like that.
Yeah, you have other things that you do, right? Are you into art?
I play music. paint. I paint. Well, one of the coolest things that I kind of consider art is I really dove in after meeting David Lynch. I really dove into yoga and meditation. And I've been finding that, you know, the way that that sort of helps you as an artist, it kind of breaks down all the barriers and you can just have this free flowing expression and exploration of what art truly is. So I think we're all artists to some degree.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about Twin Peaks. And so I remember the original Twin Peaks. This experience, would you consider this really taking you off to the next level, or especially where you keep living the brand of Twin Peaks by being this, having this opportunity? How did this opportunity happen, and how today you still are known for Twin Peaks and are involved in Twin Peaks in some sort of way because of the the following that it has?
That's a great question too. It changed my life completely. I think a lot of people, especially in the Western world, really dream of the idea of celebrity, or really dream of this idea of working with your heroes. And I was almost going to quit acting. And my girlfriend was like, I had this audition that they didn't tell me anything about. And I was like, man, that's going to be for a stupid Ford commercial. I'm not that I'm not into that. My girlfriend was like, just go. Now I was like, all right. So I get in this interview with the casting director, and she was like, what do you do? And I was like, well, I'm a bartender. Well, what do you like about bartending? And I said, no matter where anybody comes from in the world, I've realized we're all the same. We all want a good drink. We all want to be listened to, and we all want to just have a good time. And lo and behold, I got a call about a week later, and they said that you are cast as Deputy Jesse Holcomb with the Twin Peaks Sheriff's Department. I called my mom right after that. She cried. She was just ecstatic.
A real job.
You made it, baby. And then basically with the creative property that is Twin Peaks and David Lynch, it's going to last with me forever, because there's a whole different generation that's my age that still enjoys it. And I think especially with the age of superhero films and, you know, this very aesthetic form of entertainment, it's a breath of fresh air to watch this kind of neo-realistic abstract art that David does.
Yeah. Are you still going with your girlfriend?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm not getting.
Yeah, she's a keeper. You better hang on to her.
She at least give you that want and need, because we always have these times, Dave, where we're going to say, "Are we really going to try something?" And then someone pushes us forward, and we quit. And we don't go push forward, and that's an important thing.
I want to jump back close.
Yes. So I want to jump back to David Lynch for a second. So basically, Dave, just to kind of, I don't know, were you a fan of the first Twin Peaks, Dave? Because I was more, and I watched a couple times, but I want to learn more about the newer one, because that's the one that's, you know, putting James on the map and now having opportunities like talking about Potato Dreams of America. Dave, were you a fan of Twin Peaks?
I honestly never got into Twin Peaks. I was just too busy doing something else.
Exactly. There's just so many. And now there's just so many shows. Yeah. Finally binge watched Ozark. And wow, thank goodness I did. Because I've been more and more watching movies lately, and
my wife's been watching that, and I've been watching that.
Addicting. So Ozark. And then they decide a part two. Come on now, and we don't know when it's out. So you know, see, isn't it? Don't you agree, James? There's just too many shows to binge. That's the problem, to catch up.
All the shows. That's why I don't go to the supermarket. She sends me for one item, and there's 20 different selections. You know, and I can't do it.
I spent more time looking for a movie on Netflix than I actually watched the movie. I fall into that category.
Is that because of your behind the scenes, not just acting but directing and stuff? Is that one reason why you think, James? And when you're kind of like, am I going to really sit down and watch this movie?
No, that's hilarious. Well, first and foremost, I agree with you, Dave. I was never really into David Lynch. I was more of a fan of the references, like when the Simpsons would do a reference to him. Or, you know, my dad was a huge fan of, you know, Dune and Blue Velvet and all these things. So I only knew David Lynch through kind of the grapevine, which I think kind of limited my nervousness. I was like, oh, it's just this cool guy. And then to answer your question, I think we're oversaturated with a lot of content. And when I watch movies these days, I remember working with Tobey Maguire, and I went the day, like I got off set, you know, I was sitting there and I was watching This Boy's Life. And there was a scene when De Niro was driving the car with DiCaprio on the side. And his car is jerking back and forth, scaring him. The whole time I'm sitting there and I'm watching it, I'm like, they're not even driving, man. There's just two people on the side of the car just pushing it back and forth. And so it almost did sort of break down the illusion for me. And then these days, I'm exploring things like, you know, anime and reading more. And I think if I were to kind of watch a television show, right, my girlfriend likes the Great British Baking Show. And so
my wife does too. Yeah, I've watched every single episode. Oh my gosh.
Me too. Twice. It's underproved.
I'm addicted to things I never thought I would be addicted to. I don't
know. Same. I think it's the experience of hanging with my lady.
It's the British thing too, though. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
So back to James, the question about, you know, we're talking about that influence that he gave you from the opportunity to get the opportunity on Twin Peaks, but then to learn from David Lynch. You talked about meditation, some other things. What else did you learn from him? And how do you use that every day now as he's some part of a mentor of yours to where you are today as an actor?
Yeah, it's still a daily challenge in regards to, you know, life throws its things at you. And I think one thing that I learned from David Lynch, and also a very common theme of season three, is a sense of non-reactiveness or taking a moment and pausing. So not coming from a quick reactionary, but more of, you know, taking a deep breath and logistically thinking of things. I remember, you know, that, man, I've been on so many film sets and you've got directors pulling their hair out or people getting fired left and right. And I was amazed at the fact that David meditates three times a day. And you can tell it trickles down. It resonates because everybody had a decent attitude. Everybody was so collaborative and joyous. And I think people were happy to be on that set. And then being directed by him, I watching how that set worked, it made me realize that anybody can truly make a film. Like you put it on a pedestal in your head, but you can do it. You know, you have to do it. And, then the way he directs was so unique that I've never worked with anybody like that before in his style. And so it was an honor to see that.
Exactly.
Wow. Now you do what we do. I mean, you have a podcast, right? So you're on the other side of the microphone or no?
Yeah. I had
What's
two
your
podcasts.
Show all about? What do you talk about?
I have two. One is called Welcome to the Verse, and it's a completely improvised podcast about two multi-dimensional TSA agents. So anything can come and go. The other one is called The Production Meeting that I do with my publicist and manager, Clint Morris, who I think, Neil, you know?
Yeah, I've been working with Clint for how long? I don't know, maybe like 8 years. He's a great guy.
Yeah. Oh, I words can't explain how grateful I am to know him. He's done so much for my career. And this guy, during the pandemic, we started this podcast and I got to interview all these older celebrities.
So you interview celebrities?
Yeah, it was a trip. There was a couple people who I was really in awe with. And and each actor said at the end of every interview that we did that how you should tackle this industry is create without expectation. So just create. Or artists, you never know how it's going to be reciprocated. You never know, you know, who's going to judge it, who's going to love it. And the whole point of an artist is to simply create.
Exactly.
And so yeah, that's what I learned a major lesson in the last few years.
It's a huge thing about creation, because the fact is, in social media, we don't know what's going to go well, what's not going to go well. We don't know what projects are going to go well, but you have to do it. And the problem is people don't want to push record. They don't want to do things. Well, I need to do this, that. No, just do it, because you never know what's going to go well or not. I mean, 12 years I've been in this industry, and I started at just a college radio station to grow to where I am today. And you were talking about Ray Liotta, working with him. I interviewed Ray Liotta right when that show with J-Lo just got canceled. He and NBC. And he was flat out mad at J-Lo. It's funny. You have to go check out the podcast interview I did with
Van. I will.
You know, yeah. A very wise man once said, success is the enemy of, no, perfection is the enemy of success.
Interesting point.
Yeah.
Let's jump right to Potato Dreams of America. So what is your role in this? And, you know, you said this is the first time you're doing the tour thing in this type of a way. Tell us about it.
Yeah, Potato Dreams of America. It's about a young gay Russian and his mother who want to escape the persecution of Soviet Russia, which I don't blame them. And they, the mother hooks up with a mail order bride situation. They come to the United States, and it's this exploration of discovering and accepting of oneself. And there's a few twists and turns in it. And for the first time in my life, I'm normally a guy who plays, you know, cops, drug dealers, gangsters, or one time an angel. And I had this opportunity. Wes Hurley, who's the writer and director, and it's an autobiography about his life, sat me down and wanted me to play a trans woman character. And, you know, I live in Seattle, Washington. There's a lot of sensitivity, especially in this area, about that idea. And I was really resistant to it because I just like, I don't want to, you know, step in the wrong shoes. I don't want to do this role a disservice. But he was adamant, and he was like, you have a lot of expression. You've got these big eyes and you look good on camera. And I was like, hey, I'll do it. he was adamant about it. And I was like, I'll do it if I can study, treat this with respect and learn as much as I can. Cause that's what we do as artists. And it was one of the most unique experiences, uncomfortable experiences and learning experiences of my life. And the cinematography was beautiful. So it really, everything looks really great. But I remember the first day I got on set, I looked like me, and I'm sitting here talking to a group of guys and we're all just BSing with each other. And then they put me in a makeup chair, put me in a dress, wig, a lot of beautiful makeup. And this same guys that I was talking to as me couldn't even make eye contact with me. And that, you know, a very, very tiny sliver of the experience of what it means to, you know, live that kind of a life as a trans individual. And I guess the thing I walked away from that was, if you ever think you've got it hard, someone out there has it a million times more difficult. Right. And so, you know,
did you look like a beautiful woman or did you look like a trans?
I honestly, you know, not just my opinion, but the opinion of many others is I was a very beautiful looking woman. You know, and so, you know, I got these eyes and I shaved and it looked beautiful.
So
and
did they not look at you because they were infatuated with your beauty and intimidated, or what was the reason?
I honestly think because, you know, in the context of what I was talking with these guys, was, you know, macho military stuff, and you know, we're like, hey dudes, and you know, kind of the normal way that I am. And then I think just observing the aesthetic of how I showed up was just jarring, you know, and I don't blame them, but at the same time, it was just kind of this shift of perspective.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
I interviewed Caitlyn Jenner at Harvard. It's a unique experience.
You work at Harvard?
No, I spoke there three times, and he was a guest there one time. We shared the stage. And
that's great.
You know, he shared his story about it wasn't easy for him to come out of the closet at 67 or however old he was, you know, because he had everything going, a three-time Olympic champion, married to a Kardashian, et cetera, et cetera. And why did he do it? Because he felt like he was living a lie, you know.
Exactly. Well, and we live in a time, too, where you know, there's so much polarization and division, but ultimately, I think that that's just fed to us. And I think we're living through a time of enlightenment. I think we're living through a time of acceptance. It's the only way to live. You know, I've never been anybody to kind of hate on someone for just like living their truth. I think that that seems kind of counterintuitive and unproductive. And so, you know, it really is. I have a couple of friends who are in their 50s that just came out as gay. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things. It's like, you know, 40 years ago, even 20 years ago, it wasn't like that. And so I think we're hopefully moving into a time of acceptance of whatever you want to be. Just, you know, let people be who they want to be.
Did anyone tell you look Russian? You could play a Russian part. Are you Russian?
That's the like first time I've ever had that. You look like a Russian.
Those be done.
Even though it's an Italian. No, I'm half Irish and a little bit Italian, and then the rest is like German, UK. But no, I took a Russian dance class when I was in elementary school, so I'm well affiliated with the culture. Yeah.
All right, so Dave, go ahead with your final questions and involving a caregiving question. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I was just a normal guy who owns a gas station, minding my own business. My wife has this headache. We've been married for 47 years, 25 in. She loses her speech, becomes paralyzed from a stroke. And we struggle for a couple of years just trying to get our bearings and reinvent ourselves. And finally we do, and we fall back in love again. And now I become Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver. I speak all over the world, spoke at Harvard and NASDAQ, and just got back from London at the London Stock Exchange with Nigel Farage, shared the stage with a bunch of people, helping caregivers to stay alive, because 30% of them actually die before their loved ones. I didn't know what a caregiver was when I became one. They had to tell me. Do you think about that in the future? Because everyone is either going to become a caregiver or need a caregiver. You know, your parents, your grandparents, close friend. Any experience yet?
No, that's a really deep question. That's a very good question. You know, funny enough, like a very, very micro example of that, I was just telling Neil before I got on the phone call, is I'm in the process of putting my cat to sleep. And mostly it's my partners. Sure. It's really, I mean, yeah, it's really tough. I didn't expect that. And I'm doing the best I can to show up for my partner right now. And, you know, that's a very minuscule example of, you know, kind of being a caregiver, stepping outside of yourself to help somebody else. You know, I've never actually been this, you know, quote. When you step outside yourself, you become more selfless. You help other people around you. That actually gives you a more fulfilling sense of self. It's almost like a spiritual awakening. The one thing I'm learning about the last couple of years is that the one consistency in life is nothing is consistent, and we're not going to stick around for, you know, we don't have a lot of time if you think about it. And so, you know, I most definitely plan on showing up for my loved ones as we grow older. And I'm also, you know, I'm becoming reunited with my birth parents, you know, in the last few years, and they're old, you know, and there, so yeah. And I mean, ultimately too, I think it's about putting yourself and your perspectives aside, and then just showing up with love. And I mean, what you just said too, you spoke on reinvention. I'm 33, man. You know, I spent my 20s drinking, smoking tons of weed and chasing girls. And now I'm at a point where I'm seeing the longevity, and I'm beginning to uncover things that are much more important. And so kudos to you for sticking around, and then not just sticking around for your lover, but going out and helping other people, because that's what you have to do.
Yeah, well, exactly. You do what you have to do. I mean, I'm glad nobody told me. I was on a need to know basis, because I don't know how I would have reacted if I knew 25 years from now I'd still be dealing with this. You know, that's a scary thought.
And but
see, my stepmom's got Parkinson's, and my father, same thing. He'll go through hell to help his wife. Yeah.
So, and then I think you come up with another plan, and is that, Dave, you got to branch out to animals too for caregiving, teaching caregivers
I've done many shows on animal caregivers. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's huge. That's
beautiful.
Animals are nicer than people, Neil, because they don't judge you. They love you unconditionally. When you get home, they're just so excited to see you, and they don't want anything in return. Just feed them and rub their stomach.
So I guess when they're suffering through a lot of tough things, it could still become stressful for that loved one.
It's a close friend. Yeah.
It's a close friend, and you're seeing them go through that all. So again, James, appreciate it. Where can we connect you, James? Best place to watch Potato Dreams of America.
Yeah.
And connect with you. Where can we go?
Yeah. You can always find me on Instagram or Facebook, Grick Sony. Grixoni, and Potato goes on demand next month, and then in a few months I'm going out to the UK to shoot a film called Buckle Up, which is a British gangster film. And growing up watching movies like Lock, Stock and Snatch, I am beyond ecstatic. And 007. I mean, 007, baby. And James Bond. And yeah, you can always find me on social media. And if you're ever in Seattle, Washington, I help out at a yoga studio called Mind Body Hum. We do sound healing, yoga and meditation. And so I really appreciate both you gentlemen. And Dave, man, what an amazing story you just shared as well.
Thank you.
But I really appreciate both of you. And thank you so much for allowing me to plug this film.
If you meet any caregivers, send them to caregiverdave.com.
Exactly.
Caregiverdave.com. Thank you so much.
And follow his Facebook page, Caregiver Dave. It's really a good one with some great information for caregiving. Appreciate you guys. Take care. And that was, again, the Caregiver Dave celebrity segment. Take care, guys.